we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Gross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. We've got a busy show today. We'll talk to Matt Llewellyn and Craig Hershiser coming up at 3:30 for your high school whip around. The voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, at 4:15. David Leskey later on in the 4 o'clock hours. We effectively bury this era, this, I guess, season of Royals baseball. And then Jesse Newell at 5 o'clock. We'll talk college basketball with him. We'll talk a lot of college basketball with the time that we have between now and 6 o'clock. I said it yesterday, came true today. Rick Pitino is out at Louisville, and he will likely never coach another game of college basketball or really any form of basketball ever again, because if you are an institution, an organization, a program with any level of pride and integrity, you are not going to touch Rick Pitino with a 10-foot pole. And I was going to say that it's sad, his demise, but it's really not. It's more pathetic than anything else that one of the most gifted college basketball coaches, or really basketball coaches in general, decided to throw it all away for what? A couple of top five recruiting classes? Rick Pitino was great because he was one of the best player development coaches in the history of the game. And he threw it all away to get a couple of top five classes. He won a national championship in 2013 with guys who were not heavily recruited. Peyton Siva, Russ Smith, Luke Hancock wasn't even in the top 100 recruits in the country. You won a national championship with those guys, but you had to throw it away because you simply could not only play by the rules, but you couldn't even act like you were playing by the rules. He was placed on unpaid administrative leave, as was the athletic director, Tom Jurek. But both of those guys have effectively been fired. And side note, the guy who is now overseeing the Louisville basketball program? David Padgett. Yes, that David Padgett, formerly of University of Kansas fame, transferred to Louisville. He's been with the program ever since, and he's the new guy in charge. Not an enviable position, but I imagine there will be several David Padgetts popping up all across the country as other coaches are fired, and it's absolutely going to happen. Louisville has already lost a couple of their recruits, top 100 kids for this coming season. And I was thinking about what's going to happen to these kids, and I do feel bad for them, even if they are kids who took money that they shouldn't have, simply because they're kids. They're kids. Somebody came to them, said, hey, want to make some really good money? Go to Louisville. They had some slimy cretins around them, surrounding them, giving them bad advice. And now it makes you wonder if they are going to be outcasts in the college basketball world with everything happening. It makes you wonder if coaches are just going to say, you know what? I'm not going to go anywhere near those kids. I've got a roster spot, and they would certainly make my team better. But with everything happening, I don't want to end up being implicated down the road, so I'm not going to touch them. Even if there's no dirt on these kids, even if these kids were recruited the right way and they didn't take any money under the table, no impermissible benefits, even if that happened, I still feel like some teams are going to be afraid to go near them.
Yeah, because there is that conversation of, hey, look. If you're Duke or North Carolina or Kansas, whoever, look, now there's some more five-star prospects out there. But, yeah, I mean, it is a bit unfair to just lump it on all the kids that, hey, you know what, you were committed to Louisville. That doesn't speak well for you, but it's kind of how it is right now.
Somebody will pick these kids up because they're elite basketball talents. And I'm not talking about the Brian Bowen kid who was actually implicated as taking $100,000 from Louisville. But whoever does end up going after them, those are the teams that you say, oh, they ain't got nothing to hide, right? Wherever those kids end up, those are the programs I'm saying, hey, they're in good standing, because if they were comfortable enough going after these kids, it's because they're saying, hey, we didn't do anything wrong. We're not worried about taking on more recruits.
And that's something we still have to wait for. I mean, I would guarantee there's going to be a lot more schools that come out in this report. They just rated Nike today as well, so it's not just an Adidas thing anymore.
Yeah, the whole system's going to come crumbling down. All of it. Every single one of them. You talk about Nike, their EYBL, which is essentially their grassroots division. They've been subpoenaed by the FBI in furtherance of this investigation. The whole system is going down. Yesterday, Adidas was the big name that people were throwing around, and a lot of people's natural reaction was to say, well, let's start looking out at Adidas schools, and Kansas is one of them. This is bigger than Adidas. This isn't an Adidas thing. This isn't an investigation where you just look at one shoe company and look at them. No, this is a college basketball thing. It has nothing to do with what your affiliation to a certain shoe company is. If that's the way that your mind wants to work, that's fine. I'm telling you, it's not that simple. That's a very simple way of looking about this thing. It is far-reaching. Its tentacles are going to wrap themselves around nearly every single aspect of college basketball. I don't think there's any reason, if you're a fan of a particular program, to start wondering, should we be worrying? There's literally no way to answer that question unless you know exactly what's going on. But just an affiliation with a certain shoe company is not enough of a connection to say, oh, they better be worried. Okay, there were two Adidas schools implicated. There were three Nike schools implicated. There was one Under Armour school. So this isn't just unique to one apparel brand or one shoe company, okay? This is far-reaching, and it's going to touch nearly every aspect of college basketball. I heard a lot of people yesterday saying, you know, this is the worst day in college basketball's history. No, it's the worst day in NCAA history. It's not the worst day in college basketball history, because if you are a college basketball fan, I think you have to look at yesterday and say, this is a great day in college basketball, because if there was ever going to be something that's going to be the tipping point for getting rid of all of this dark, nasty stuff that's going on behind the scenes, this would be it. The FBI getting involved, handing out prison sentences. If there were ever a time which the NCAA would say, all right, we've got to revamp the system because clearly what we've got isn't working and we can't legislate it, now is the time to start making some change. But if it doesn't happen, then it never will. If the NCAA, after this thing's all said and done, which will probably take over a year, maybe over 2 years, by the time that happens, if the NCAA still says, you know what, we like our business model, we've just got to police it better, then we're going to be stuck with it forever. Because what's becoming abundantly clear amongst everything that's very confusing and convoluted, one thing that is abundantly clear is the NCAA is way in over their heads. Like, they have to realize, all right, we just simply do not have the means to legislate our rules. And what their rules are, and what the big rule that everyone's going to begin talking about even more than they already have been, is the fact that you have an excess of money in college athletics. $1 billion television deals for March Madness, multi-million dollar athletic deals between the schools and these companies. There is an excess of money. And the reason there's an excess of money is because you are such a valuable corporation and you don't have to pay for your labor, right? Yes, the coaches get compensated very fairly, but the reason why college athletics is successful is because you have premier athletes doing a lot of the legwork, and those athletes simply are not being compensated to their market value. Yes, there is inherent value in getting a college education. There is value in getting that scholarship and getting that degree and getting their room and board and getting the exposure that college basketball provides to these athletes. No one is arguing against that. All of that stuff is very valuable for these athletes if they use it the right way. Unfortunately, that value doesn't quite meet up with the value that they are providing to the programs and to college athletics as a whole. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Travis Hines of College Basketball Talk, I thought, put it perfectly. When you outlaw things in any aspect of life, if you outlaw something, all you are creating is outlaws. People are going to find a way to circumvent the system to get kids what they think they deserve. It's just like Prohibition in the 1920s. We decided, you know what? Alcohol is illegal. You can't have it. Well, there's still alcohol around, and all of a sudden you are creating outlaws to meet the demands of the people who want to consume it. And it's the same way with college athletics. You outlaw kids being able to be compensated, then what you're creating are outlaws who only the only value that they possess is their proximity to a player or their relationships with the university or their relationships with an athletic company. These are the types of people that the NCAA should be worrying about weeding out, because if you weed these people out, then you don't have a problem. Unfortunately for them, the only way to weed them out is to create a system in which they have no value, in which their proximity or their relationship with a player or a shoe company means nothing. Because if the money's on top of the table as opposed to being underneath it, then there's no rules to break. And then you don't need a middleman. You don't need somebody who can work the back channels for you, because that's what's happening. You know, these top flight players are saying, well, I deserve more than what I'm getting. And whether or not you agree with that is beside the point, because clearly a lot of them are getting it. Doesn't matter if you think they deserve more than the scholarship and the room and board and tuition. That doesn't matter if you agree with it, because the facts are that they're getting it one way or another. And in order to do that, you have to say, well, I want money. I don't know how to get it. That's when these slimy greaseball characters come in, these middlemen, these handlers. They say, well, I can help you do that. I know a guy who works for this company. I know a guy who works for this school. We can find a way to make it worth your time. These are the types of people who are creating the problems. And you, if you can't police that, which the NCAA clearly can't, that's what the FBI is coming in and doing, right? They're saying, you can't police it, we will. All right, you worry about your NCAA eligibility rules, we're going to worry about the federal crimes that are being committed by these people. And what the NCAA has to come to realize is the fact that if we can't police it, which we clearly can't, we can't hold a flame to what the FBI is able to do. We don't have the resources and the tools readily available that they do, because nobody does. If we can't police it, then maybe we should alter the system to make it one that we can police. And what they have to realize is you are never going to be able to police this system if you have got a black market going on. And the only way you're going to have a black market is if you're outlawing certain things. And that happens to be a very, very lucrative business for the NCAA. And it's going to be tough for them to admit, okay, you know what, we're going to have to give some of this money back. We're going to have to start compensating these players. It's like every other walk of life, literally every other walk in life. You are compensated your market value for the value that you provide to the entity that you are employed by. That's what this needs to become. We have to do away with this idea that these kids are amateurs. There's nothing amateur about playing for tens of thousands of people on national television because of a TV deal that is worth billions, not millions, billions. Okay, if you want to start talking billions of dollars, then you can't bring up the word amateur, because there's nothing amateur about it. If the NCAA can admit that, then we might actually make some headwinds in this. It's 318 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll continue this conversation. We got your high school whip around coming your way in 10 minutes right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
After the hour here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Still waiting to get the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, on the horn. Be listening coming up later on this hour. I'm going to give you a chance to win two tickets to the NASCAR races coming to Kansas City next month with the What's Your Number giveaway brought to you by the Kansas Speedway, because everybody has a number, every driver has a number, every fan has a driver, and all you got to do is tell me yours. We'll be having your chance to win two tickets to the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Hollywood Casino 400 at the Kansas Speedway on October the 22nd. Coming up later on this hour, I'm Nick Schwert. RCST going till 6 o'clock tonight. David Leske at a quarter till 5. And Jesse Newell at the top of the 5 o'clock hour talking some college basketball. But right now, we welcome on the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, onto the program. How are you, sir?
Doing okay. 3-0 and getting ready for Monday Night Football.
I know. How awesome is this? This next, 5 weeks? It's going to be all primetime games for Kansas City, which I know throws maybe a wrench into the schedule a little bit, but exciting to have your team on that national stage.
Yeah, the price you pay is that you get thrown off the routine grid, meaning the NFL really, once the regular season starts, you're on a, I mean, Tuesday morning at 10:30 is this, and Wednesday at 7:30 is this in the morning, and 6 o'clock at night is this. And so when you play these different times, whether it's Sunday late on a Midwest game or a Monday night or a Thursday night, it really is a challenge logistically for the coach. And Andy Reid, once the schedule came out, has been working on this. So the best way for the Chiefs to navigate this is not only have a good team, which they do, but have a head coach who's got all the experience he's got of trying to navigate the logistics.
But having a head coach who is as experienced as anybody in the league, and having a quarterback in Alex Smith who's just that steady, calm, cool demeanor guy in your as your quarterback, and you've got so many veterans littered around both sides of the ball here, it does seem like if there was a team who would be able to navigate having a huge wrench thrown into your schedule, this would be the one.
Yeah, and you've got guys that have been around double digits in the league, whether it's even Colquitt or Derek Johnson, or you mentioned Alex Smith, who, by the way, is the highest-rated quarterback in the NFL. And you look at his yards per play, not only his completion percentage, Chiefs are number one in the NFL in red zone offense. They're number one in the NFL in inside the 30 offense. They haven't even been close to those categories in the first 4 years. So he's not only the so-called game manager pushing the buttons, he's actually performing statistically this year.
He has been as good as you could possibly have expected him to be through the first 3 weeks of the season. And I know where you're going to go. We harp back to those training camp reports. You talking about how it was the best, you know, training camp summer off season that you've ever seen from Alex Smith. But I got to imagine, just as good as he's been playing, has to have caught even you by surprise a little bit, right?
Well, I think all the pieces have snapped together more quickly than I thought it would. I knew Kareem Hunt would be good. I didn't know he would be off the planet good. I knew that I was curious on my report. You heard me talk about Conley, and is he going to be consistent? He has proven that. Albert Wilson did not have a good camp, and yet he's had a really good 3 weeks. And I think all of that is like a puzzle that's around Alex Smith, and he's seeing I've got way more at my disposal than he even thought he might have had. So I think that's working all in his favor.
Have you come up with a nickname for Kareem Hunt yet?
Well, the guys call him Special K, so I'm going to go with that one.
Okay.
But I said on the air, he's more than cereal, man. He's the whole breakfast. And, I mean, he's a second trip through the buffet line. And you're going, this is the best breakfast I've ever had. That's if he can keep it up, look out. And here's why people are really excited. They've wanted to have Chiefs fantasy guys for years, and now they've got one. They're just destroying their fantasy league by taking this guy.
Well, and I keep waiting for him to hit that proverbial rookie wall that we always hear about in the NFL. But through 3 weeks, it just seems like this kid is not going to slow down whatsoever. You referenced him as a bowling pin, like the kind that those clown dummies that you can keep hitting and keep hitting and he never goes down. And I see that on a weekly basis, but I want to give credit where credit is due. There have been some gaping holes for him to run through. We talked about the offensive line during training camp. They have been outstanding creating holes for him this year.
They have, and especially in the fourth quarter, which is even most impressive. Now, the issue at the offensive line would be pass protection. The Chiefs are near the bottom of the league in sacks allowed. They're last in penalties and penalty yardage. And usually that means a lot of hidden yardage. I've talked about the hidden yardage stat before. I mean, they have a 300 yards in penalties. Many of those are the offensive linemen, and that equals 21 points. Now, they're making that back because they're so good in the red zone, and they're second in the NFL in fewest drops. Last year, they were 30th in the league in drops. So that's made up for the hidden yardage. But to your assertion, which is good, the offensive line has been good in the run game, exceptionally good in the fourth quarter, and that's when you win football games in the NFL.
Had another long touchdown run by Kareem on Sunday, and the streak is now at 9 games. 9 straight games for this team with a 50-plus yard touchdown. How absurd is that?
I think it's the most underrated stat that surrounds this team right now because I believe it's an NFL record. I mean, nobody's been able to do it. Even the Showtime and Greatest Show on Turf and all of the stuff where the you know, they get all the sideshow circus show. This has been just quietly done every week and making NFL history. And I think if people just kind of take a deep breath and enjoy it, they've got the show right in front of them. And who knows, they're going to try to do it again this week against a good Redskin defense.
Yeah, kind of, you know, what the theme of the first 3 weeks has been, putting a lot of rumors to bed, putting a lot of those rumors to rest when it comes to Alex Smith being a game manager, or Andy Reid not being able to dial up the right kinds of plays in the red zone, or this offense not being explosive enough, not taking enough shots downfield. That record kind of speaks to all of those things, right? Like, you want explosiveness, well, the numbers are right there, and nobody in NFL history has ever done what they're in the midst of.
And people now are saying, well, you're not giving Kareem enough touches. Well, are you getting in too many touches? I mean, that's just the way people are going to be. But Andy Reid, truthfully, is having fun with this, because he now has way more gadgets that he can work with. And so there's a ton of stuff to come yet. And as I mentioned it every week, they have yet to return a kick or block a kick or a pick six. They have zero non-offensive touchdowns. And the Redskins have already had a couple. But those are coming. You know those are coming because they've been there the four previous years. And the way the Chiefs play, they're going to get a couple of those to go with it. But barring injury, I don't see the offense slowing down anytime soon.
We're talking to Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs here, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Defensively, I heard you say this after the game, and I thought you nailed it on the head. The Chiefs defense pitched a shutout there in the second half, and they absolutely needed to. The offense kind of slowed down there late in that game, but the defense kind of picked up their end of the bargain and picked up some of that slack, and it was probably as impressive of a half of defense that we've seen this team play all year.
And they had to defend 30 snaps with the one possession lead after they were handed a 14-0 lead. So to your point, where the offense kind of got stuck in molasses a little bit, now that was a lot of it forced by that defensive front of the Chargers, because Ingram and Bosa were playing awesome in that game. They were hard to block. But the defense then had the pressure shift to them. And for the most part, they did a really good job. And I really think if Mitchell, who had the two picks, high points that other one, they're going to get four straight picks on Rivers on the one touchdown drive the Chargers had. But when it was time to buckle down, again, this defense has proven they're able to do it. And now they're going to have to do it against a Redskin team that looked really good in their Sunday night victory. We didn't get to see it live. We were flying home, but I've looked at tape of it and had friends that watched it live and said, oh, man, these guys were better than I thought they were, when Chris Thompson and Vernon Davis and that defensive front's tearing it up, like Ryan Kerrigan and all those high motor guys they got on the front.
Yeah, Marcus Peters with that other interception. On the day, I saw that he allowed three catches for 20 yards, had the pick, had another pass breakup as well. The label that kind of has been thrown around with him over the first couple of years of his career has been, he's a playmaker, he's a ball hawk, he takes a lot of risks, but a lot of the time it pays off. But is he kind of slowly turning into one of those shutdown corners that every single team is looking to find?
I think he was there in his rookie season. We hadn't had a guy like that since Dale Carter. And even though statistically, because people kept throwing at him his rookie year, like, still a rookie, man, let's take a shot. Wait a minute, he's running back the other way for a pick six. What were we thinking? Well, people were in that mode, our opponents, for 10 or 12 games into the season. He really now has influenced a side of the field where people think twice about what are we going to run over there, because he's lurking somewhere. The Chiefs face it this week, quite honestly, in Josh Norman. The other three teams the Chiefs have not had that guy. The Patriots don't have him, the Eagles don't have him, and the Chargers don't have him. Hayward, I guess, but Hayward's not Josh Norman. And the Chiefs have that guy better than Josh Norman with Peters. So, yeah, he's legit, man.
So you think the biggest difference with him is that he's just garnering more respect from opposing offenses?
Yes. Yeah, they're just not going over there. Like, why would we try that? Let's figure out something else out. And, oh, they're missing Nelson on the other side. Let's go over there and see what this Mitchell kid's all about.
So perhaps Tyreek Hill going to have the biggest test of his career going up against Josh Norman now that he's kind of a household name. Is this the sort of matchup where Norman's kind of going to be shadowing number 10 all day?
don't know. It's up to Greg Minoski, the old chief, is now the defensive coordinator for the Redskins, the third DC they've had in 4 years, because Gruden, I think, is a little cranky with defensive coordinators. But a lot of DCs don't like to do that. I know Bob Sutton does it because it's easier said than done, Nick, in the fact that you throw everything else off. It's like the boxing one in basketball. Oh, that's good. We can do that. But then what are the other four guys doing? Well, if they overload my area, who do I cover? And so I would say this. I think Josh Norman will face one of his greatest challenges of his career, even though he's a veteran, because there aren't many guys playing in the NFL right now with the ability and crazy mad skills that Tyreek Hill has. And I think the one extra day this week will help him, and it may affect him on the back end the following week against Texas or against Houston. But he's going to use this extra day. He was wearing down just a little bit in that second half of that Charger game.
All right, Mitch, the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holt, is joining us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You are a perfect Sterling round 80-0 on your high school mascots this season. I hope you're not starting to go through the motions.
I'm vulnerable right now. I'm just, you know, I'm also logistically thrown off. The Monday night game, I go, is this Wednesday with Nick or is this Tuesday? Is this Thursday? So I'm completely thrown off my biorhythms, and that might be just enough to take me off this segment of teams you're going to give me.
All right, well, first up is Beloit High School.
The Beloit Trojans. I spilled much blood there. I played there as a Smith Center Redman and had the unfortunate circumstance of playing Beloit at the beginning of the run where they won three straight state titles. They were good. They had some D1 players during that time. Wade Wentling played at K-State. Grant Tiroff, I believe, played at KU, and they were big. And I remember going out for the coin toss, looking up at these guys going, what am I doing with these guys?
What was the scouting report on Mitch Holtis in high school?
Lots of speed. Maybe not the smartest guy, but you have to respect his speed. Don't let him get behind you.
I see. I would have figured you as somebody the exact opposite. You know, those typical things we hear about the guys who aren't the most athletic, but they're super cerebral. They play the game the right way, gritty, gutsy, that kind of stuff.
Well, my junior year, I actually played some outside linebacker, and we had a really good team, and we played some really good opponents. Remember, I'm at Smith Center, our
That's
boys
right.
program. But they always give you the scouting report of the team, and then they list, like he's 6'2", 205. Well, our middle linebacker was 215, played Division I. Our other backer was like 205. I'm over there to crisp 145. Which way do you think they're running?
Oh man, that's great. I like the listings there. All right, up next, Wamego High School.
The Red Raiders. Right there. You know what? Sign of the you got Rimrock Farm north of Lawrence,
right,
which is awesome. But it's close to equal as Wamego's. They run. Doesn't Rimrock run 6A, 5A?
Yes.
Okay, state cross country at Rimrock. 4A through 1A is run at Wamego. And they have something there called Heartbreak Hill, which breaks your lungs more than your heart. But it is really a fantastic cross country course on the northwest edge of Wamego. So, long standing tradition of great cross country runners and events at Wamego High School.
All right, up next, the alma mater of my grandmother, the great Loretta Schwert, went to Hoxie High School.
The Hoxie Indians. Then the great Loretta Schwert would be very proud of their like 65 straight women's basketball wins.
Very proud
in the
of
class,
it.
I think they're 1A. I think they got beat last year, but man, what was it, a run of 4 years, 3 or 4 years? They didn't lose. And so Hoxie, also Brad Lambert, the head coach of Charlotte. University Charlotte, you know, whatever they are now, the University of Charlotte, used to be North Carolina Charlotte, is a native of Hoxie, Kansas. Max Moss played on K-State's last Final Four team, is from Hoxie, Kansas. There have been some great athletes from Hoxie, America.
All right, final one, Golden Plains.
Okay, the Golden Plains, this one's always gets me. It's Rexford Golden Plains Bulldogs.
I thought we had you
this
up against the ropes.
You did. I was struggling. Rexford, Selden, Golden Plains is a combination of those two schools. Not far from Hoxie, by the way. So I see that you got stuck in Sheridan County, or at least that era, our area, in trying to find these names. But, yes, I'm proud that I pulled that one out, because for years that has been one of my blind spots, Golden Plains.
All right, 84-0. We got him off his biorhythm a little bit. His schedule's kind of mixed up with all these primetime games. But you know what is a good elixir for when your body clock gets off? You know the answer. Just go see my guy, Bruce Collinsworth, at 9th of Mississippi.
9th of Mississippi, man. Papa John's, which if you ask him for Holtus's sweet nectar of the end zone. He also sells that there along with great pizza. So I am driving down the road as I speak, talking on my Bluetooth to you, but I'm raising a glass of the sweet nectar of the end zone to your Grandma Schwartz for her great career at Hoxie High School.
I'll make sure.
Good job,
she,
Grandma.
I'll make sure she does the same thing. Appreciate the time as always, Mitch.
Just tell her about the Smith Center Redmen. She'll know.
Oh, she'll know all about it. She'll talk to me for days about it.
All right. Go Hoxie.
All right. Thanks again, Mitch.
See you, Nick.
That is the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtus, joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwartz. Going until 6 o'clock, Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star will join us coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. But right now, I want you to give me a call. 785-843-1321 is the phone number. NASCAR fans, what is your number? Every driver has a number. Every fan has a driver. What is your number? Give me a call right now, 785-843-1321. You give me your number. Tomorrow, somebody else will give me theirs. Friday, somebody else will give me theirs. On Sunday, you're all competing. Whoever picks the best number for that race on Sunday is winning two tickets to the NASCAR Cup Series Hollywood Casino 400 at the Kansas Speedway on October the 22nd. 785-843-1321, the What's Your Number giveaway brought to you by the Kansas Speedway. David Leske of Baseball Prospectus Kansas City joins us next. It's about a quarter till 5 here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We will talk to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. But right now, let's welcome on our guy from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, David Leske, joins the program once again. Well, David, the Royals mathematically eliminated from playoff contention last night, even though they did win. Jason Vargas picks up his 18th of the season. We kind of saw this day coming over the last couple of weeks, but has it set in that it is finally official, and the Royals, this core as we know it, has seen their final glory days in terms of meaningful October baseball?
It hasn't. I was at the game last night, and I was looking through my phone, and I saw, oh, Twins are down 6-4, Royals are up. I thought, maybe they can last another day. You don't think that it's, obviously, you're not expecting the miracle. You're not expecting the six Royals wins and six Twins losses, but you think maybe it can go one more day. And I looked down again, Twins are up 8-6, and I thought, well, that's that, I guess. So it started to set in a little bit and see them walk off the field. I don't think that they realized at that moment they'd been eliminated just yet until they got to the clubhouse. And it's not a great feeling. But, you know, it's the reality. And we, like you said, we knew it was coming. We knew that once they went into their swoon in August, that it was going to be a really uphill battle. And when they did really in September, it was just kind of a whipping game until it happened. But, you know, it's tough because after years of meaningless games every September, they played meaningful games every September for the last five seasons. And the year they get eliminated, it used to just be kind of a whatever. It happened on September 12th this year. It happened on September 5th this year, whatever. But now it's kind of a sad day, and you know we've got five games left to watch this core play basically, and that's pretty much all there is to play for.
And I know in the moment we'll probably look back on it and maybe somewhat I don't know the right word to say this, but I think we're going to look back on it like at least now and say, man, I wish we could have just made a few more tweaks last year or a few more tweaks this year, and perhaps they would be vying for a playoff spot or vying for another pennant, and that's not the way it's going to work. But I think down the road, once we're able to kind of separate ourselves from the here and now, we will look back on it and just say, man, what they were able to do for two seasons was a rarity that a lot of teams, whether it's the haves or the have-nots in baseball, would be very envious to have.
Yeah, I mean, winning two pennants in a row is not easy, and it's rare. And you're right, in the moment, it kind of feels like a missed opportunity the last few seasons because you think, okay, this is a core that theoretically should be able to compete for another title. You know, when they re-signed Alex Gordon back in January of 2016, it wasn't, oh, cool, they got their guy back. It was, okay, time for a dynasty. You know, three titles in a row, three pennants in a row, whatever you want to say. And it didn't work out that way. And so in the moment, it seems like a disappointment. But I think, you know, in a few years, you look back and you'll look at, instead of 2014 and 2015, it'll be 2013 to 2017. That's the golden age of this era of Royals baseball. And I mean, I think over the last 5 years, I think two teams have more wins in the American League than the Royals. That's pretty good. Not a bad run. And look, they're not mathematically eliminated from a fifth straight season of 500 or better, which would be the first time they've done that since 1980. And with the Tigers in town, who knows? They could sweep this series pretty easily, even though neither team has anything to play for. So, I mean, I don't think it's impossible for them to finish 500, and that would be a pretty cool accomplishment. So, in the grand scheme of things, this is a disappointing end to a really fun time, but at the same time, it's the end of an era in general. But this is definitely part of that 2014-2015 story, and I think the 2017 team will eventually be remembered fondly. Right now, they're kind of seen as the disappointments, but in the future, I think you're right. I think it will be looked at as a much more positive season.
And I mean, there were obvious changes with Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto coming in, James Shields kind of being the one who that trade that really kind of spurned that success later on, and Kendrys Morales came in, and you know, you had some changes at the back of that bullpen. But overall, I really don't think we're going to remember just that 2015 team, which is really interesting to me. Like, we're not just going to look at that roster of guys. We're going to look at that entire 4 or 5 year window, including guys like James Shields, who maybe they didn't have the same impact when it comes to winning that World Series. But it's just interesting to me looking back on it already and thinking about a 5 year window as opposed to just that 2015 season and the team that won it all.
The team won one championship in that 5 years, but it's a five-year championship, kind of. You're right, because, I mean, it's funny because I feel like we look back in, say, 10 years or something, I think people will start to kind of mix Hosmer seasons, and they'll say, oh, yeah, the World Series year, he hit 301 with 26 home, or 25 home runs. And you go, well, no, 25 home runs came in 2016. The 301 was in 2014, whatever it is. And, you know, I think that it'll just kind of all mix together as one big season, and it's been a really fun ride. I mean, you go back to 2013, and they made that crazy run in the second half. They ended the home schedule with Justin Maxwell hitting a walk-off grand slam, and at that time, I thought this is as good as it gets. That was awesome to see this home schedule end on that note, and I don't know if it can get better than that. And then it did get better than that. And then it kept getting better. And ultimately it stopped getting better and it got worse again. But that's kind of the nature of anything, especially in sports. And it's been phenomenal to be able to follow this team, to cover this team, to be a fan of this team. Pretty much everything about this team has been great over the last, really more even beyond that, back to 2011 when all these guys started to come up. Because the 2011 season, I think, was the most fun I've ever had watching a bad team. Because Eric Hosmer comes up, Moustakas comes up, Perez comes up, Kane was still in AAA most of the year because of Melky Cabrera hitting so well in center field. But Duffy comes up, Holland's up. You know, all these guys start to make their way to the big league. Dyson, too. And it was really fun to watch that bad team. You know, it was a terrible team on the field, and I didn't want that season to end. It's funny because I'm kind of ready for this season to end because it's been a little bit grueling in a way. But I did not want that 2011 season to end. And so over the last 7 years, baseball has been really, really fun. And it wasn't always that way in Kansas City. So that's a nice change.
We're talking to David Leske of Baseball Prospectus Kansas City here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So now as we do begin to look forward, we've talked about it not just over the course of this season, but really over the past couple of years. And we would always add a disclaimer whenever we would talk about this to say, okay, let's just enjoy the here and now. But it is probably appropriate to kind of look forward and see what this next era of Royals baseball
is going to look like. Like, over the past couple of years, I mean, we really have. We've been having these conversations about Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain's future for what seems like 3, 4, 5 years yeah. now. Has any of that really cleared up in your mind? Like, do we know any more now than we did a couple years ago about these guys' future?
Not really. I mean, we kind of know that Eric Hosmer is going to get the $100 million-plus that he wants. We know that Moustakas is probably going to get some big-time money and that Kane's going to be sought after and all that. But we don't know where they're going to go yet because we can't know that. But we don't know either how the Royals are going to look because they've stuck with this core to the bitter end, which means we haven't had much of a chance to see Raul Mondesi. We haven't had much of a chance to see Chesler Cuthbert, although he played a lot of the year last year because of Moustakas' injury. But we haven't seen Hunter Dozier. We haven't seen a lot of these guys who are probably going to factor prominently on the 2018, 2019, 2020 Royals. We haven't seen them because the stars have still been here. So we don't really know what it's going to look like yet. But what we do know is that the Royals will likely extend qualifying offers to all three of their big free agents. They'll likely all decline, and they will likely all sign $50 million deals, which means the Royals will get three draft picks. And so they can kind of start their rebuild that way, and hopefully they draft better than they have in the past, and hopefully it's not a 30-year process. I can't imagine it will be. But, we don't have a lot of answers yet. I do think this is going to be one of the more interesting off-seasons in a while. Maybe not one of the best off-seasons or the most enjoyable, but definitely one of the most interesting.
Yeah, because I we can talk about, best-case scenario type stuff, but I think what you kind of laid out is what's most likely going to happen. So just to kind of go further on that subject, like, do you think it's most likely that Moose, Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, they're all wearing different jerseys next year?
I mean, I think you have to take the field if it's Royals or the field, just because the Royals, I mean, it's not like they can't play with the big boys in some ways monetarily. I mean, they've got a $150 million payroll. Let's not pretend like they can't spend money. But I think the odds are pretty good that they're not going to go out and match $150 million for Hosmer or even $100 million for Moose or 5 years for Lorenzo Cain. The years for Cain is really the bigger issue because he's not going to get huge, huge money, but he's going to get a few years, and on those legs, I wouldn't pay him for 4 or 5 years. But I think the odds are pretty good that they're all gone. There's always a chance that, it's an Alex Gordon situation where one of them or two of them don't get the contract offers they wanted. They come back to the Royals and they say, "Hey, what do you got?" And the Royals find a way to make it work. I could see that happening, but in all likelihood, they're all gone. And that's okay. It's the end of that era, and now time to find the next Moose, the next Hosmer, the next Cain.
What do you think the Royals' mindset is on those guys? I mean, obviously they're going to feel it out and see what kind of chances they have, but how do you think they're kind of handicapping their chances?
Oh, I can't imagine that they're confident and they can keep them, really. But I would guess that they will make offers to all of them and figure it out in the payroll structure later if they need to. They'll probably make offers knowing that they're not going to be accepted by all three. I would guess that the offer they make to Eric Hosmer would, if he were to say yes, would be the biggest contract in team history by a lot. I could see them going $125 million on him. And, the biggest contract is, what, $72 million for Gordon. So it's a big deal. But I just think that it's more that they feel like they need to make an effort in a way, but don't. I don't think they feel like they have to go above their means to bring them back because I think most people are expecting them to be gone, and so there's not really a PR backlash by not bringing them back. I think that they're resigned to finding the next wave and getting that started and hopefully not being a 62-win team again, but figuring out a way to win again in the short term.
If you remove, your great memories with that core group of guys, with all of those guys individually, do you think that's the smart decision? Like, if you're running an organization, would that be kind of your mindset moving forward? Like, you take away the great memories and feelings that you have about these guys and just look at it logistically, like it makes more sense to just try and start over and find that next wave of guys?
Yeah, the smart thing is not to pay $150 million for Eric Hosmer, who is up and down in his career and hasn't yet even flashed plus power. And people say, oh, he hit 25 homers last year, 24 this year. Yeah, but, I mean, Didi Gregorius has like 28 home runs. So, well, what does a home run mean anymore, really? Mike Moustakas, injury problems. I mean, he's dealt with a bad knee all season long after missing most of last year with a bad knee. And Lorenzo Cain's got his issues, too. And so, if you look at it objectively, it's not great business to give any of these guys a 5 to 7 year deal. And I think that's what it's going to take for at least Moustakas and Hosmer. And I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they brought them back. I'm not saying that I'd roast Dayton Moore or anything, but it's probably pretty smart to take the draft picks, get the huge draft pool next year, and have 4 picks in the first round, basically, and start to rebuild the system and hope that in 2020 they can start to show the fruit of it and start to win in the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, David, this is our last conversation of the season, but it's not a goodbye. It's a see you later, because we'll be talking plenty over the offseason with free agency and winter meetings. So I know this is going to be an emotional goodbye, as it is every single year. This one amplified just a little bit because of the implications and the end of an era, so to speak. But always a pleasure. We'll miss talking to you every week. But again, it's not goodbye. It's talk to you later.
Look, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened,
that's
okay?
Right. That's right, but I'm crying anyway, so
me too.
I'll chalk it up to tears of joy, man, for all the good times
we've
had.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks again, David. We'll talk to you again sooner than you think.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
All right, that's David Leske. I am Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 2 hours down, one to go. Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star joins us next. 5 o'clock hour here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Let's talk to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star. He joins the program now. Jesse, I don't even really know where to begin with this one after that bombshell dropped on the college basketball world yesterday. Looks like Rick Pitino is going to be out at Louisville, and a phrase that has been iterated a handful of times over the past couple of days by everybody monitoring this is that it is just the tip of the iceberg. So I'll ask you an impossible question to get things going. What do you envision the following chain of events being across the college basketball landscape?
Yeah, I appreciate you starting with the impossible question. those are always the best ones to start with. Yeah, it's really difficult to know now what the scope of this will be and how far it will reach and how many more other schools or coaches it will affect. I mean, I've seen some people out there thinking – maybe this could be a good thing in the long run, that maybe some of this corruption and behind-the-scenes stuff that's always happened that people knew was happening but kind of turned a blind eye towards because there was really no way to make that out in the open or to prosecute those people, kind of like the way they're being prosecuted now with the FBI, then maybe some good could come out of this for now. But it is just a crazy thought right now for this to drop right before the college basketball season and to think that – a lot of coaches and programs out there are just kind of sitting and waiting. And we don't know all that the FBI knows. We don't know all that they're being told with this magical hotline. We don't know how long this is going to last or how long or the scope of what their investigation is going to be. So it's just kind of – it makes you a little bit uneasy, I think, if you're just sitting here thinking, like, it could be a whole range of things from – something that might not, maybe yesterday was the worst day for college basketball to, wow, yesterday was just the starting point and this could get a whole lot worse for the sport and for the teams and programs and players and coaches in general. So I don't know. It's really difficult. It's really difficult to take news like that all in one day, especially not knowing how the FBI and the feds are going to react and I guess respond to all the things that they know now or they are going to learn over the next few weeks. So I guess we'll just sit back and watch and see kind of how the sport evolves from here, because I think one thing is for certain, the game is not going to be the same from this point on.
No, I agree 100%. And when you talk about it being either a terrible day for college basketball, if you're a coach who's cheating, or if you're the NCAA who is potentially watching their system crumble to the ground, but it's a great day for, I think, advocates of making change and progressing this sport in terms of getting rid of these slimy back channels that everybody has known are going on the entire time when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to handlers, when it comes to family members of these recruits who are just standing around looking for a handout. Like, if there was ever going to be a tipping point to change for the better in college basketball, aka compensating these players for their what the value they bring to the universities. Clearly, they're being compensated just illegally. If there was ever going to be a tipping point to change that business model, this would be it, right? Because if this doesn't change it, then nothing ever will.
Yeah, I thought Dan Wetzel had a couple a really good paragraph in the piece that he wrote about it. Basically, it's like, this is America, and this is sort of like the capitalism nature of it, is that these kids, because the NCAA rules, they are worth more to their schools than what room, board, you know, all the things that you can provide to a student-athlete, they're worth more than that. And so in this sort of society, what's going to happen is they're going to get compensated more than that. People are going to get them money, whether it's by legal or illegal channels, and that's going to be the baseline of it, because they are worth more to the universities than what the universities can give them. And that's, again, because of the amateurism model that's out there right now and the refusal of the NCAA to pay these athletes, even the top-level ones. So, again, you kind of it's like anything else in life. You know, we can all complain about, okay, well, the flights out of Puerto Rico right now are ridiculously high, and that's just terrible. Why would you do that to people? Well, the demand is high, and everybody is out there to make money, and that's why that thing goes up. Or same thing with prices on gas and things like that. But if you're looking at it, again, if one airline says, we're going to keep our flights cheap, that doesn't mean every other airline is going to say, well, we're going to make ours cheap. I mean, everybody's out there to make money, and that's part of what makes the society what it is. And so, again, you can say, oh, handlers, bad handlers, shouldn't be doing this. Well, if this one guy isn't doing it, another guy is going to do it, or the other five guys are going to do it. And I mean, it's a way to make money. It's a way to support yourself. It's part of a system that's gone back years and years and years and years and decades and decades. So, again, it's more what you're seeing right now is a flashlight or a shining of a light on the system and how it is broken. And so maybe, again, that's kind of the hope when you see the John Gasways type about it, or the Dan Wetzels, or saw a lot of people looking at kind of the big nature program or the big picture nature of this thing with college basketball, that you hope that by shining this light on what's gone on and the ugliness that can be on that underbelly, that you say, okay, let's move forward, let's figure out a better way, and let's fix the system so it's not taking advantage of these kids. And again, you're right. I mean, a lot of them are in a very difficult spot. They don't have money. They don't come from money. They need money right now. They might have pro careers, but the money's going to mean a lot more for them now than it is in the future. So maybe that's something that you get a little bit closer and that you kind of give up this amateurism thing that we all believe maybe was gone a long time ago. So we'll see what happens with it. Again, I don't know where this is going to end or where this whole thing will end up in the final day, but at least for now, it seems like it's starting a bigger discussion that might be good or might be beneficial for college basketball down the line.
We're talking to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. And yeah, to your point about capitalism, to me it's like prohibition, alcohol prohibition in the 1920s. If you have a demand for something and all of a sudden you say, okay, well, you can't have it, well, then there's going to be people in those back channels finding ways to get that to you. And that's what created a lot of crime. That's what created a lot of criminals. And yes, it brings slimy, nasty, disgusting people out of the woodworks, in this case, who are using these kids as pawns for paychecks. And if you're a 17-year-old kid and somebody's telling you, hey, I know what's best for you and you don't want to go to college for free, let me find a way for you to make some money in the short term, what 16, 17-year-old kid who doesn't come from money isn't going to jump at that opportunity? So, like, we can complain about the system and say that it's wrong, but there's a lot of reasons why it's been operating the way in which it has.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you're a kid in that situation or family in that situation too, if you're a top recruit, it seems like that a lot of these are just, that's the standard. You know, that's the bottom line. That's kind of the bidding war, if you will, at least from those documents that you saw, that like those kids are expected. And again, they're, a lot of them are in tough situations and need financial means and could use the help. And so it's a system that needs to be looked at, and it's a system that's going to be looked at. And, you know, with your prohibition example, maybe that's the step. You know, you legalize alcohol and all of a sudden you get rid of that stuff. I mean, again, if you drop the amateurism, if you allow players to get paid based on what they're worth and based on what, as, you know, as we know, the Power Five universities are probably going to break off here very soon and kind of start their own league so that the big boys can play with the big boys, and so they don't have to worry about the tiny schools out there that can't fund their press boxes or can't build up new stadiums, all those sorts of things. So then you have a system where the Power Five schools are all competing against each other. If you're in the Power Five, you know the rules, and that way those schools can go after these recruits and pay them what they think they're worth, and then you kind of have an equal playing field, at least from those Power 5 schools as far as they're concerned, to say, hey, it's more of a free market, and these kids can get compensated for what they're worth or what they can bring to these universities, instead of kind of, again, the charade of amateurism where these kids aren't getting paid, they shouldn't get paid, all those sorts of things. So I just think those conversations are going to happen, and they have to happen, and especially after everything that's going to come out in the next week or 2 weeks or month or year or whatever the case may be, it seems like that conversation is just going to have to take place, because the NCAA is going to be exposed as something that this is not what is in the best welfare of the athletes and the high school students that are being brought up. They're going through these dirty channels because that's the only way to get compensated. It seems like there's got to be a better way.
And I told you off the air that last night, like before I went to bed, I'm just sitting in my silent living room, just staring at the ceiling, trying to wrap my head around all of the different aspects of college basketball that this could potentially affect. Jim Gatto of Adidas was one of the 10 people picked up yesterday. And then today, you know, Nike employees are being subpoenaed. How do you think this could potentially alter universities' relationships with these apparel companies, knowing that they play as big of a hand in this mess that's going on as anything else? Do you think that this could potentially change the way that these humongous multi-million dollar apparel deals between universities and shoe companies are affected moving forward?
Yeah, I have no idea. It's a really good question, but it does make you wonder. And again, you read some of the documents, you read some of what went on and how they try to get to these kids early, and they kind of get funneled to a certain shoe brand or a certain apparel company from early on, you know, even starting with the grassroots things that Adidas does and having, you know, those kids meet up people like that. So it's difficult. It's a tricky question, and I don't know where it goes from here. But, again, it's just for so long it just seemed like all this happened and fans – sort of knew or at least had an awareness that these things went on, but it just wasn't spelled out as well as this FBI document with, again, the wiretapping and with the conversations they had in the interviews and the undercover stuff that goes on, you know, so it gets spelled out a lot more here and becomes much more clear what goes on. Even, and again, that's even in the tiniest of samples, that's even in the smallest of exchanges and only a few schools listed, only a few assistant coaches. So it just makes you know that this is kind of a widespread deal. If you can get a pretty good sense of it just with a couple people, talking to a couple people, that this is going on in a lot of places. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that moving forward. Obviously, KU just signed its 14-year, $191 million extension with Adidas. So that can be a lucrative thing for a university. That can be a thing that brings in a bunch of apparel, brings in a bunch of money, helps you pay for a fundraising effort that's going to, you know, for KU try to transform Memorial Stadium and some other facilities around the campus. So, yeah, we'll see what it does moving forward, but it's obviously not a good look for Adidas, as you saw with the stock dropping and everything that happened there, that one of their higher-ranking guys was involved with that. But, again, we'll see what happens moving forward, just because it just doesn't seem like this story, like you said, just even the last few hours, more stuff is breaking, more subpoenas are out, more people being questioned, more people, you know, getting warrants, search warrants, all those sorts of things. It just seems like this story is not close to being over.
What do you think the chances are? Again, I'll ask you another question that you probably don't have a definitive answer to, but the death penalty is being tossed around for Louisville, a program that was already on probation, Rick Pitino out, never going to coach a college basketball game again. If there were ever a time for the NCAA to really flex their will and slap somebody with the harshest punishment you could possibly have, that would kind of be the time to do it right now with Louisville, don't you think?
Maybe. It's the thing about it is, and it's very difficult in this day and age, is everything is so quick, everything is so instant that sometimes you do just kind of want to take a deep breath and stop and consider. Because again, if you give the death penalty, you can't undo that. You know what I mean? Like, you can't say, oh, shoot, we learned a lot more information here and need to do take back. You know, like that's not going to happen. You know what I mean? Now, with Pitino and the athletic director, it seems like a little bit different because this wasn't the first strike against them. I mean, this seems to me more like, hey, you guys were already being looked at on, you know, you already kind of were on probation sort of thing. Like, okay, this is the next strike. You guys are out of here. But to get somebody to do something like that, especially, you know, they weren't alerted of this investigation that the FBI and Department of Justice was doing. So a lot of this new information for them is new information. And so To come down that hard on Louisville, I mean, who knows what other schools, programs, players, coaches might be affected in the future days. You might set a precedent very early on that you would be very difficult to follow if a lot more stuff comes out. So I think for now you wouldn't see that sort of announcement, at least for a while, just because you do need to digest things. You need to let some things play out. But, again, I'm not the right person to be asking you. This is an impossible question for me to answer. I would think that for right now, the NCAA is better off taking a deep breath and seeing where all this goes before punishing anybody too much or going after any one school in particular too much, just because we just don't know where everything is going to lead from here.
He's Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star. I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Well, I guess we can now finally start talking some actual sports and some KU basketball, because they will officially open up their season on Saturday with Late Night in the Fog. Be honest with me, Jesse. Did you have to Google Lil Yachty yesterday afternoon?
I did Google Lil Yachty. I went ahead and looked up his Twitter account and saw 2 million followers. So I thought,
big deal.
Hey, that's a big deal. So good for Lil Yachty. I've already told someone else that if I like his music tomorrow, I might go with dreads and red hair. Anything's possible with that. So, yeah, we'll see how he performs. We all know what it's for, though. I mean, these sort of nights, especially with recruiting, when you get those guys on campus, get the young kids. I know Late Night in the Fog has become a family event. A lot of times dads and kids go because, or moms and kids go because it's the one event that's free and there's a lot of fan-friendly stuff and you don't have to pay any money and you kind of feel involved with the program without paying money. But, for that 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, it's going to be all about those recruits that are behind the bench loving this rap star that, like you said, I had to Google because I'm an old guy. So, we'll see what happens with him. But that's definitely one of those touches that Bill Self and the staff are trying to put in there to try to cater to the younger audience. And from the response on Twitter that I saw from guys like Svi and Devontae, they seem pretty excited. And so if they're pretty excited, I'm going to assume those recruits that are coming in are going to be excited as well.
All right, see, this is a pro move. You take something where you thought we were going to go talk strictly basketball, but I'm going to turn it back around and go back to our initial conversation about recruiting. There are schools across the country who do not have the ability to go out and get guys like Lil Yachty. Whether or not you and I know if he's a big deal, these guys, these recruits, these players know who he is, and it is a big deal for them. Kentucky had Drake at their university a couple years ago for their little late night extravaganza. And it does make me wonder, when you look at schools like Louisville or Miami or Oklahoma State or USC, any of these programs who were implicated yesterday, it may be just a little bit. It doesn't tell you a ton, but it's just like a small glimpse into the luxuries that are afforded to those cream of the crop, you know, the top tier of the very top tier of programs, and the way that they can appeal to recruits that other universities and other programs simply do just not have at their disposal.
Yeah, it does. But I think I'm kind of going to go back to the point I made earlier, which is where, and listen, Lou Perkins talked about this about 10 years ago. I remember he came and he spoke to students on KU's campus. It was around the time that I was actually there. But he kind of talked about the future of college athletics, the future of where it's going, and talking about, hey, the Power Five conferences are going to break off and become their own entity. And so let's just say you do that. You have those Power Five. And that's why everybody's so concerned with, okay, when realignment happens, you know, if the Big 12 dissolves, where will Kansas end up? Or where will, you know, K-State end up? Where will Oklahoma? Because you want to end up when the musical chairs ends and the song ends, you want to end up in a chair. Is that those five conferences, or the four or whatever it's going to be, the 4-16 super conferences, are going to break off on their own, and then everybody again is going to agree to this equal level playing field. So in that instance, you know, let's say KU can afford this rapper coming in, great, good for them, that helps their basketball recruiting. It's kind of the same disadvantage that KU's going to face in football. You know, okay, Alabama can bring in, you know, whoever, Justin Timberlake, to sing the national anthem for the first game, whatever. Okay, that's fine. KU knows the disadvantage it faces in football just as it knows the advantage it has in basketball. So I think what you'll see more and more when that day happens, and it seems like it's going to be when instead of if that day happens, that these schools competing against each other, I mean, it's kind of all fair game. It's like you understand what you're going up against. And, I mean, listen, so much of our society, it's, you know, David Booth donates $50 million to the Memorial Stadium Fund out of $350 million that wants to be raised as part of that project. Good for him. good for KU. That's going to help KU's recruiting because he's a billionaire and has a lot of money. Good for KU. And so I think that's just kind of more what you look at. You know, if Alabama can do things that brings in recruits, or if KU can bring in a rapper I've never heard of but that the recruits love, then good for them. That's part of what goes into it. And these Power 5 conference programs are going to all kind of be on the same level playing field and say, hey, if you guys are doing it, we have the resources to do the same thing as well.
He's Jesse Newell. You can check out all of his work in the Kansas City Star. Always appreciate the time. Fun conversation, Jesse. Thanks for joining me.
All right. Sounds good, Nick.
All right. That's Jesse Newell. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.